a TV One special presentation of News One Now.
I'm Roland Martin. Welcome to this News One Now special here on TV One, the Muhammad Ali funeral, remembering the greatest. We will have live coverage from beginning to end of his homegoing service. This right here, folks, is a shot outside of Louisville, Kentucky. It is a gorgeous day in Louisville where he is going to be laid to rest. Over the last couple of hours, there's been a funeral procession that has gone through a 19-mile funeral procession that has gone through the streets of Louisville, historical markers in Louisville, including the home where Ali grew up, including the Ali Center, and then everything, of course, ended at the cemetery where Ali is going to be buried. This is video from earlier. As you see, the hearse carrying the great Muhammad Ali, drenched with flowers, as they traveled down the streets of Louisville. A number of people approached the hearse, touching it, kissing it, throwing flowers. It is an amazing, amazing thing to witness. And so our coverage of the homegoing service of Muhammad Ali starts right now.
I have wrestled with an alligator. I done tussled with a whale. I done handcuff lightning, throw thunder in jail. That's bad. Fast. Last night I cut the light off in my bedroom, hit the switch, was in the bed before the room was dark.
But everybody stop talking now, attention.
There's only one way to cultivate the heart quality, and that is to become more and more selfless. Not selfish, but selfless.
For the past 7 days, the world has mourned the loss of the great champion Muhammad Ali after he passed away in an Arizona hospital last Friday. Over the last week, we have seen a number of tributes on television, radio, online, places as far away as Bangladesh, in other countries, celebrating someone who was a global icon. Well, it all ends today in Louisville, Kentucky, where Muhammad Ali right now is being laid to rest as his family buries him at a cemetery there in Louisville, Kentucky. But after they leave there, there will be a public memorial service where upwards of 20,000 people will be in a facility there in Louisville, Kentucky. We're going to show you that facility as we speak. Folks are right now traveling there, going inside of there. It is in a packed place. In fact, when tickets were made available, some folks were waiting in line as early as 5 a.m. All the tickets were gone in no more than an hour. This is the KFC Yum Center in Louisville, Kentucky, where the Louisville basketball team, where they play, it seats, again, 15,000 to 20,000 people. Dignitaries from all over the world are there. We know for a fact the Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., Jim Brown, Larry Holmes, Will Smith, Lennox Lewis. You also have Evander Holyfield, Dick Gregory, MLK III. So many people are there to honor Muhammad Ali, someone who touched people all across this world. Now, initially the program was supposed to begin around 2 p.m. That has been delayed, we believe, till about 2:30 or 2:45 Eastern. We'll keep you abreast on that. Now, at the actual service, among the speakers will be former President Bill Clinton, comedian Billy Crystal, as well as broadcaster Bryant Gumbel. So there'll be a number of eulogies given. Muhammad Ali actually planned with his family this service years ago. He was very clear in terms of what he wanted. Now, yesterday, there was a Muslim prayer service, where some 14,000 people were in attendance. That gives you a sense, again, of the outreach of Muhammad Ali. And then, of course, his passing is so important, we chose to break in the coverage. And we've only done this for a handful of people. Coretta Scott King, Dorothy Height, the Charleston Massacre in South Carolina, and now Muhammad Ali. Folks, over the next for the next several hours, we actually talked to a number of people who knew him, who celebrated him, but also here in the panel with me in D.C., Greg Carr. He is the Department Chair of Afro-American Studies at Howard University. Christy Winter Scott, a host and analyst for Comcast Sportsnet. And Coach Butch McAdams, host of the Butch McAdams Show on WOL 1450 AM right here in the DMV. Also on Skype in Washington, D.C., Cora Masters-Berry, the CEO of Recreation Wishlist. She's also the widow of former Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Barry. She also was the first woman appointed as chair of the D.C. Boxing and Wrestling Commission. And on FaceTime in Palmer Park, Maryland, is Kevin Rivers Jr., a boxer signed with Golden Boy Promotions, led by Oscar De La Hoya. And also, folks, on the phone is Barry Hunter, the head trainer of Head Trainer Headbangers Boxing here in Washington, D.C. First off, I want to go to Greg Carr, start with you. I was sitting here contemplating and trying to remember the last person that had such a funeral. Michael Jackson didn't.
No.
Granted, that was coverage. That certainly was. There was a huge service there in L.A. But in terms of this kind of procession, I think James Brown may have been the only non-political figure I can think of.
I think you're right, Roland. I mean, the person that came to mind me first was was August Wilson, who was paraded through the Hill District of Pittsburgh. But first of all, there's nobody like Ali. And I think you're right. I think James Brown is as close as we would get in that death ritual. And unlike Ali, James Brown's ritual was more, I think, oriented and grounded in that black community, first in the Apollo, and then, of course, when he went home to Georgia.
Before I go to everyone else here, I want to go to the phone lines. As I said, the memorial service has not started yet. There's so many dignitaries who are there. Joining us on the phone right now is Reverend Jesse Jackson, Sr., founder of Rainbow Push Coalition. Reverend Jackson, welcome to TV1's coverage of the homegoing service of Muhammad Ali.
Thank you for giving so much voice to this yet another event that has such pivotal meaning in our lives. And you know, as I look at what's happening here today, one joyous moment to see religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam in one place under one roof, the marvelous expression of coalition. His sense of decency has shamed the attack on Islam. It's ashamed the attack on Mexicans. His sense of decency has had an impact even beyond the grave, Roland.
Reverend, first and foremost, I saw you earlier today on the set with Larry Holmes. And what is so interesting about that, I've seen figures like Evander Holyfield, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, so many others there. They said, folks said they need to be in Louisville to celebrate his life.
Say one more time, Roland, please.
I said with the likes of Larry Holmes, Jim Brown, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Evander Holyfield, I've heard so many major superstars say they had to be in Louisville today to celebrate the life of Muhammad Ali.
Well, he did several things. One, it was along with Don King, he redefined the pace here of these athletes, number one. Two, he made visible their situation, number two. So I think that His work in the ring, he was the master of his art. That's the first option, he's the master of that. He used the platform to put light in the darkness. And there's more work to be done. I mean, when they had with the Flint water crisis, and they still got 34,000 water pipes they need and only 34 in, those high-profile visible athletes ought to have something to say about Flint. Chicago, 60 kids killed last month, 400 injured. Those high-profile world-class athletes should have something to say about that beyond the ball field. So all these legacies is not just to honor him, but to honor him by serving the agenda.
Reverend, when was the first time you met Muhammad Ali?
Oh, boy, it had to be 50 years ago. We were in Chicago. He had just become the champion out of Miami. And we found a kinship with each other, and we were together. And then, of course, we went to exile. We spent even more time together. Because he was totally abandoned. He went from making $6 million for 15 minutes down to almost nothing. But I submit to you that he never questioned making the decision of digging double dollars. He never questioned that decision.
Chicago played a critical role on his development. He even lived in Chicago for quite some time. Talk about that, please.
Willie made his conversion experience under Mr. Muhammad in Chicago. He developed a new sense of discipline, religious passion, and focus. He found a God he could identify with in Islam in Chicago. He was married in Chicago. A lot of things about him in Chicago has a great meaning to us. And he always was available, because many of these athletes, we can't touch them. We can't see them. They're strange to us. So Ali was always with the Tiger Lounge, at the church, at Red Bats and Reddits. He was always available and accessible.
All right, then, Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much for stepping out of the room where the service is taking place to chat with us on TV One.
Thank you, sir.
All right, then. Christian Butch, when you see folks who are 60 and 70 sitting outside shedding tears, right. When you see folks who are 30 and 40, when you see folks who are 10 and 15, I can't think of another sports figure that has that kind of impact on cross generations.
Right. Well, this is a man, Roland, who transcended sports. He was a man's man. He made people stand up for themselves and what was right. And, you know, he always said, you know, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. But that goes back to scripture, when you have to be as wise as a serpent, but also as gentle as a dove. And that was who Muhammad Ali was. And when you think back to how he has transcended through these generations, I sat in the living room with my parents, Ronald and Janice Winters, and watched Muhammad Ali fight and take out people. He only lost 5 fights in his entire career. So this is a man who was a champion, yes, but he stood for more than that, all out of the ring and all throughout his life. He stood for justice. He stood for morality. He stood for himself and his beliefs and the principles behind his beliefs. And some people nowadays, the current athletes, the professional athletes, are a little nervous, a little wary of taking those kinds of
risks. I won't say nervous. I say flat out scared and punking out.
Okay. Come on, brother.
True. And, you know, he wasn't. He was not that man. He was bold. And this is a man whose heart continued to beat for 30 minutes after all of his vital organs shut down. So this, the fortitude of this man, this gentle giant, was amazing. And that's why I say he has transcended sport in such a way. And he has been a mentor for all ages, all genders, because of who he was as a bold man.
Coach,
global icon. Muhammad Ali was fearless and selfless, and no one in sport, Michael Jordan, Serena Williams, Tiger Woods, not even Jackie Robinson, adds up to Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. Case in point, a few years ago, Ali, at the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, and you had Derek Jeter, you had Alex Rodriguez, all of the stars from both leagues gather around this one man. Global icon.
Well, there was a photo that I want to go to Cora Masters Berry. There was a photo of Prince, the first time he met Muhammad Ali. And Muhammad Ali is touching Prince's hair, and I'm going, okay, you got to be the man.
The only one, brother.
Yeah, Prince let you touch his hair, and he's smiling and laughing.
That's right.
Cora, your thoughts about Muhammad Ali? Cora? All right, then. We don't have Corey there. Barry. Barry, you there?
I'm here.
All right, then. Go right ahead. What did he mean to boxing?
You know, he was... I look at Ali as not just a fighter. He was a warrior in and out the ring. He was a humanitarian. He was a peacemaker. And he definitely gave me courage. I remember listening to him. I used to live on 8th Street Northeast at 716. And I remember when the fight and him and Joe Frazier had the first fight. And I remember leaving that fight thinking that the wrong guy won for whatever reason. And I looked at how he stood up for himself, how he was able to say no when it wasn't very popular to do so, when so many people wanted to say no and say yes. He taught me that you don't have to be what everybody else wants you to be. It's okay to be yourself. And he was a spirit, and I try not to think about his passing. I think about what he did for the sport, what he did for me, and what he meant to the world.
One of the things that we talked about, and you mentioned earlier in terms of being fearless, and I want y'all to go ahead and pull this up. I'm going to play on my computer here. This took place in England. That was a television show. And they were asking different questions of Muhammad Ali. And that was a woman who stood up and she called Muhammad Ali, she called him arrogant. Mm-hmm. And she called him arrogant, and you talk about stunning. I'm gonna play it in a second. His response, just straight raw. So I'm gonna do that in a second. Do we have Cora there? Do we have Cora? We don't have Cora? All right, then I'm gonna go to her in just a second. I gotta ask you this here, Greg. Mm-hmm. You could talk about the outpouring of love. Reverend Jackson mentioned all of the different faiths, and that was the case yesterday.
Sure.
The multiple faiths that were present at that service.
Yes, sir. Cat Stevens, one of the pallbearers, come from yesterday's service. Now, Cat Stevens, we don't know him as Yusuf Salam. He's a Muslim. Louis Farrakhan was there. For me, it's very interesting to question this ritual today. What we're about to witness is really more about preserving and extending a particular narrative of Ali's life. What is this going to mean? I mean, Ali gave an interview to the Black Scholar in 1970 where he prefigured what would happen. He said, controversial figures are controversial in the moment.
That's a video right there of Mike Tyson. Entering in as well. Mike Tyson, you see the shot there you saw, that was from earlier. Guys, we can go back to that. That was from earlier. That was entering into the funeral home before they left the procession. That's Will Smith. Of course, he also is one of the pallbearers there with Lennox Lewis in front of him for Muhammad Ali as well. And so this was at the funeral service. This was at the funeral service. Before the procession actually began. Greg, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I agree with Coach. He's an iconic figure, but he says in 1970 that controversial figures aren't praised in the moment mm-hmm. they're alive. Mm-hmm. It's afterward that they're elevated. And what this ritual is about, as we see this unfold, is going to really be about how people are trying to frame his narrative. Muhammad Ali did not transcend race. He transcended white supremacy, but he didn't transcend race. And so it'd be very interesting to see how people like Bill Clinton, for example, eulogize him. Clinton signed the Muhammad Ali Boxing Reform Act in 2000. But if that act had been in place 10 years earlier, we might still have Muhammad Ali around because he fought way past his time. And in fact, Ishmael Reed says this is really in some ways a tragedy. But today, Billy Crystal, what has he got to do with it? This is all about framing Muhammad Ali in a way that if he were still the Muhammad Ali of the 60s and 70s, I don't know that we would recognize this.
Well, I want to play this here because this was an interview again that took place in England that I found to be real interesting. So guys, so watch this. If you want to see how raw Ali was, check this out.
I
don't care what you don't like. Just buy a ticket to see me get my butt whooped.
No. Listen, okay. I'm in a minority in this country.
What's your minority? I'm from England. You're a minority. You're from England. You own England and America. You white. You can go into one of the city you want to go. Oh, you from England. You're more freer than me. You from England. Didn't you say you're a minority? You know you can go to towns, move in neighborhoods. You can buy things over. You can open a business downtown Chicago and do business, and I can't do it, but you from England. Now you got some nerve to come over and be mad at me because I'm proud and I want to fight and be confident and get my people to be proud and fight and do. We the minority too. We've been a minority for 400 years, and you freer than me. You from England. You are freer than me, and everybody know you. How many of you white people here truly believe that she's not as free as me or any black man? She can open up a shop downtown. He can't even rent a store. You can. Don't compare yourself with no black man.
You want to stand up?
You got to be out of your mind, lady.
She's a woman, though.
Whatever she is, she's a white woman.
I'm a church fan on that.
There it is, brother.
He's telling the truth.
That was straight. I mean, look.
There it is. And you know, it's interesting. Ali said, as a Muslim, he could go anywhere in the world where Islam was practiced, mm-hmm. and there were churches in this country that he still couldn't go into. I mean, he framed his whole life as a global figure against the struggle for freedom, for not just for his people, for all oppressed people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, today it'll be very interesting to see if that's going to be a common theme, or they're going to keep this about the boxing and the impersonation.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why all this week I kept making the point about him being unapologetically black.
Yes.
Right.
Because you cannot talk about Ali only in the past 30 years without dealing with what created Ali.
Absolutely.
That's right.
What set that up? What positioned that? And see, the problem is that Ali folks are scared of.
Mm-hmm. Will Farrakhan speak today? Will a representative of Warf D. Muhammad? They say Muhammad Ali left the Nation of Islam. No, he didn't. When Warf D. Muhammad took them to the World Community of Islam, he stayed with those Muslims until the 1980s. And then eventually, by 2005, he embraced Sufi Islam. But if this is truly inclusive, does that mean you're including the people who made him? Haven't heard the name, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, except on your show and in this context. So what Ali are we talking about? This is a battle, and Gerald Horn would say this is a war over memory in a lot of ways.
Kevin Rivers Jr., I want to pull you into this conversation. You are a young fighter, someone yep. trying to follow in the footsteps of Ali. Please share your thoughts with us about this day.
Today, I'm saddened for the loss of Muhammad Ali, but at the same time, you know, I'm very happy. Ali, he's the greatest of all time, I can say, because, you know, inside and outside of the ring, he has done tremendous things. He won many hearts, won many accomplishments. Ali, he was greatness. He was a soldier. He was a strong brother.
And when you talk about that, when you talk about him being a soldier, he did not shy away from the tough fights.
No, not at all. Ali, he came to fight. He beat most of the greats. Ali, he was the greatest. Like I said, he's the greatest of all time. He beat everyone. That's my man.
when you think about, and we made that point earlier, when you think about the stances that he took, do you believe that athletes today would be, as Christy said, a wee bit afraid to be that strong and bold as Muhammad Ali was?
I say athletes today more, it's kind of like, it's more about the money in most cases, and it seems like it's going to be that way. Back then, Ali times, you know, they fought the best. That's they came to fight. You know, it was about the title. It was about the recognition and being recognized as the winner. It wasn't about the money. So, I mean, that era is that era. Our era is kind of like, you know, you have some fighters who will take the same step Ali took, but a lot of fighters, you know, it's going to be about the money.
Earlier we were talking, Greg, about, again, I played that one clip, and a lot of people really don't appreciate how smart and insightful Muhammad Ali was.
Right.
Here's another clip, folks, of Muhammad Ali in an interview where he is talking about whiteness in America.
Better, but I always wondered when I went to church on Sundays. I've always been one to, I'm not just a boxer. I do a lot of reading, a lot of studying. I ask questions. I travel these countries and watch how their people live, and I learn. And I always ask my mother, I said, Mother, how come is everything white? I said, why is Jesus white with blonde and blue eyes? Why is the Lord's Supper all white men? Angels are white. Who? And Mary and even the angels. I said, Mother, when we die, do we go to heaven? She said, naturally, we go to heaven. I said, well, what happened to all the black angels when they took the pictures? I said, oh, I know. If the white folks was in heaven too, then the black angels were in the kitchen preparing the milk and honey. So listen, you quit saying that, boy. I was always curious, and I always wondered why I had to die to go to heaven. Why I couldn't have pretty cars and good money and nice homes now. Why do I have to wait till I die to get milk and honey? And I said, Mama, I don't want no milk and honey. I like steaks and I said, milk and honey is a laxative anyway. kings in heaven? So anyway, I was always curious. I always wondered why. You know, Tarzan is the king of the jungle in Africa. He was white. White man. I saw this white man swinging around Africa with a diaper on, hollering, oh! Do you all see Tarzan over here?
Right.
Tarzan? And all the Africans, so he's beating them up and breaking the lion's jaw. And here's Tarzan talking to the animals, and the Africans been there for centuries, and he can't talk to the animals. Only Tarzan can talk to the animals. I always wonder why Miss America was always white. All the beautiful brown women in America, beautiful suntans, beauty shapes, all tight complexions, but she always was white. And Miss World was always white. And Miss Universe was always white. And then they got some stuff called White House cigars, white swan soap, king white soap, white cloud tissue paper, white rain hair rinse, white tornado flow wax. Everything was white. And the angel food cake was the white cake, and the devil food cake was the chocolate cake. I said, Mama, why is everything white? I always wondered, you know, and the president lived in the White House. And Mary had a little lamb, his feet as white as snow, and snow white. And everything was white. Santa Claus was white. And everything bad was black. The little ugly duckling was a black duck, and the black cat was the bad luck. And if I threaten you, I'm gonna blackmail you. Mama wanted to call it white male. They lied too. I was always curious. And this is when I knew something was wrong. When the Olympic gold medal in Rome met me, Olympic champion, the Russian standing right here, and the Pole right here. Is Poland considered a communist country?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm defeating America's so-called threats or enemies. And the flag is going, ton, 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 ton. I'm standing so proud. Ton, 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 ton. And I done whooped the world for America. Ton, 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 ton. I took my gold medal, thought I'd invented something. I said, man, I know I'm going to get my people freedom there. I'm the champion of the whole world, Olympic champion. I know I can eat downtown now. And I went downtown that day, had my big old medal on, and went in the restaurants. At that time, black things weren't integrated. The black folks couldn't eat downtown. And I went downtown, and I sat down, and I said, you know, a cup of coffee, a hot dog. He said, the lady said, we don't serve Negroes. I'm so mad. I said, I don't eat them either. Just give me a cup of my... I'm the Olympic gold medal. And 3 days ago, I fought for this country in Rome. I won the gold medal, and I'm going to eat. The manager, I heard her tell the manager, and she says, he said, well, I'm not the man that he's got to go out. Anyway, I didn't raise no hell. They put me out. And I had to leave that restaurant in my hometown where I went to church and served in their Christianity and fought and daddy fought in all the wars. Just won the gold medal and couldn't eat downtown. I said, something's wrong. And from then on, I've been a Muslim.
Yes, I was going to ask you, in fact, what attracted you to the
truth, but... the teachings of Elijah Muhammad on how black people's been brainwashed, how they've been taught to love white and hate black, how we've been robbed of our names in slavery, we were robbed of our culture, we were robbed of our true history, so it left us a walking dead man. So you got black people in all white country, and they don't know nothing about themselves, they don't speak the language, they're just mentally dead. And this is happening all over the world. But the first place that will rise will be the black people of America, and then the rest of them will. But it's going. I was one who heard the truth. And when I heard the truth about my name was not Cassius Clay, I know a black man in America named John Hawkins. Now, you know who John Hawkins was. He was a slave trader from England. But the white people at that time, if one had five slaves and his name was Jones, they would be called Jones property. If you was auctioned off to Mr. Smith, your name was Smith. Identifying you as property of certain masters. So now that I'm free, now that I'm no longer a slave, then I want a name of my ancestors, Muhammad Ali. Like a Chinese, how could a Chinese look named Robert Smith? how would a German look named Edward Goldberg? A Jewish name. So When I heard that we don't have our names, we don't speak our true Arabic language, we were robbed of Islam, our true religion, and we've been made deaf, dumb, and blind in slavery, and Elijah Muhammad was taught by Allah, who we refer to as God, to teach us the truth that will free us. And when I heard it, I've been free ever since. I have no racial problems. I don't go where I'm not wanted. I'm proud, and Islam did it. So, and after these things that I heard in church, preaching, and watching this and that, I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't pinpoint it. But as soon as I heard the truth that Elijah Muhammad teaches us in America, it made me accept it.
That was Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, it was.
Yes,
it was.
Absolutely.
And you have to consider the time frame. Now, he's speaking in today's language, but this was in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that initially fascinated me about Ali, then Cassius Marcellus Clay, was that in 1960, as he alluded to, he won the gold medal, but came back to his country, to his home, Louisville, and couldn't eat in a restaurant. So as the story goes, what did he do with his gold medal? He tossed it in the river.
That's right. But you know, interesting, the narrative, as you say, he was a master at crafting his own narrative.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Muhammad Ali, by his own discussion, says he got introduced to some of the teachings of the Nation of Islam in Chicago at a Golden Gloves tournament before 1960.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Ali, in making this narrative, it almost sounds like Malcolm X. These things that never added up to me, suddenly, in the words of Malcolm, clicked. And I think that's one of the reasons why he and Malcolm got along so well, because what you heard right then, that was straight out the Nation of Islam.
Well, bottom line, I mean, Malcolm was his introduction, his teacher. I want to go to this live shot. This is a live shot inside the KFC Yum Center in Louisville, Kentucky. Again, as folks are taking their seats, getting ready for this memorial service, you might have seen the shot there. I saw one of Malcolm X's daughters there in that particular shot. There are a number of dignitaries there, VIPs there. You just heard us talking to Reverend Jackson. We are trying to get a number of other folks on the phone. The gentleman right there, folks, you see, in the glasses there, balding, that is Ishmael Muhammad, who is one of the sons of Elijah Muhammad. He is there as well. And so certainly glad to see him. While we are doing that, that's Malcolm X's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, which one of his daughters is right there?
It looks like Abla. I think she's the one who's speaking.
Yep, that's Abla Shabazz. And so while we're doing this here, y'all, we are on live television while this is happening. So let me, I'm about to text my folks for them to call Ishmael Muhammad. See, we can get him on the phone as well. So we do a little multitasking here. The funeral service was supposed to start at 2 p.m. It has been delayed. We're hearing it will start 2:45, 3:00. That's what we're waiting on. Let's go back to the shot on the inside of the room, please. That's the outside shot of the KFC Yum Center. Let's go back on the inside, giving us a chance to identify some of the other people there. Let's stay on this shot, please, while we pull up Cora Masters Berry. Of course, she is the widow of Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Berry. Cora, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Doing great. We're going to keep that shot of the facility there, there in Louisville, Kentucky. There's a live shot there. Just your perspective, Cora, on on Muhammad Ali.
Oh, you made that mistake, Malcolm. There's a lot of competition between Muhammad Ali and all the other champions, that he was the greatest of all time, not only inside the ring, but in his everyday life. He was a really good person, but more importantly, he was so committed to his people and to justice, and he was such an easy person with so much easy access. People think because he was so great, he was difficult to be around, but he would do anything for anybody, and a lot of people were able to get him to help them for their various causes. He was just really one of God's special people.
We were just playing a video clip of really his unapologetic blackness. In many ways, your late husband was the exact same way, and that's what actually rubbed a lot of folks the wrong way.
Well, I always used to say that Muhammad Ali was the freest black man in America, because the stance that he took during the time he took were very difficult. And though people are praising him now, he was very reviled by the majority of white Americans in the United States during that time. And so for him to stand up, refuse to go to Vietnam, and also change his name and become a devout follower of the Nation of Islam was not an easy transition in this country. And he took it and just did what he had to do until he got his title back. But during that time, it was very difficult for him. But I will say this, because I lived during that time. I was in college when he was doing all of that. Black community stood by him all the way.
Absolutely. Also, you see the gentleman that just walked right across. That is one of Louis Farrakhan's son, yeah. Who just walked right across as well.
Mustafa. I think that was Mustafa.
No, that wasn't Mustafa. That was one of his other sons. Yeah. And I'm actually texting Mustafa right now. So trying to get his dad on the phone. Mm-hmm. So
that wasn't Ali. It looked like her, though.
Okay.
But she is going to speak, but that wasn't her.
Gotcha. Uh-huh. Cora, When you think about this legacy, it's been how have you interpreted how Muhammad Ali has been framed over the last 7 days?
Well, you know, I'm very grateful that his greatness outside the ring has been amplified. You know, a lot of times people will just want to praise him for what he did inside the ring, but what he did for this country, for the nation. He changed his dynamic in terms of what was important in life. And so I think he's been amply normalized during this time. People talk a lot about his fans. They talk a lot about the fact that he gave up his license. They talk about his courage. They talk about his philanthropy. He was a very generous person, gave a lot of time, money, and energy to a lot of different causes. And so I think it's been a really balanced coverage. I'm very proud of that, and he would be very happy.
Christy, you want to make a comment? Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to speak to the legacy of Muhammad Ali and in terms of him being a prime example of how to be a man for men, but also for women. What to expect from a good man and the model that he set forth in that regard. So I think he left such an impression on so many people because of that. You know, people sometimes don't have their fathers in their lives. So a lot of people, I've heard Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley say that he was such a tremendous role model for them. And their bold statements, giving themselves nicknames and so forth and so on, came from Muhammad Ali. And that boldness, and sometimes when you say things so many times outside of your mouth, it resonates somewhere inside your soul. And you can just see it on their faces as they've been speaking about him this week.
And I've had a chance to speak with a number of individuals in the last 7 or 8 days. And they tell a story of Muhammad Ali visiting D.C. or Chicago or Philadelphia and blending, being with the people. But not just being with the people and being approachable, but actually going into his pocket and passing out $100 bills.
Yes, sir. In fact, the nation had to stop him, man.
Yes.
They had to say, well, brother, you can't keep doing this.
Yes.
You're giving out money, man.
Yes.
Well, we heard Jesse Jackson say that he was making $16 million in short time, but he also, when he was in exile for those 3 years, how he was going for speaking engagements mm-hmm. for $1,500 mm-hmm. a pop, but he was also cracking his wife's piggy bank with 200 some dollars in it to get some gas money to get to these speaking engagements. So this is a man who sacrificed,
yes.
and it wasn't about him, and he was talking about how selflessness is so very important. I think that's part of his legacy as well.
Well, that's why it's important for people to understand what folks gave up.
Right.
When you think, because understand, folks, Dr. King, on April 4th, 1967, gave his speech Beyond Vietnam at Riverside Church in New York. 3 weeks later, Muhammad Ali refused to be inducted into the draft. The last year of Dr. King's life, nearly all of his speaking wiped out.
That's right.
Folks didn't want to hear from him. Black folks trashed him. His approval number dropped to the lowest point it ever did. He was a guy who was high, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and all of a sudden, at the lowest of the low, because he opposed the Vietnam War.
That's right.
3 weeks later, Muhammad Ali says no to being drafted. High heavyweight champion, Olympic gold medal, American hero, all of a sudden, lowest of the low. And so this ability to try to break the bank. If you think about Paul Robeson.
That's right.
When
brother.
Paul Robeson when he was fighting against bigotry and racism in America, they were able to get after Paul Robeson by denying him his passport, which kept him from making money. One of the reasons why he died almost penniless. When I interviewed Harry Belafonte said because of what they did to Robeson, he purposely made sure that he saved his money, invested his money, so if anything ever happened and they tried to prevent him from leaving the country with his passport, he still had some money. And so Ali was in a situation where, yeah, they were trying to break him financially, and he said, even if you try that, I'm still not going to Vietnam.
That's right.
And he would do it again. That's the thing. It's like there was no wavering because of the struggle he was going through financially. He's like, I'm not going to bend and break because you're forcing the issue here.
That's right. And he turned money down, too.
Right. And we look at Ali inside the ring as the greatest, and I think that's a very appropriate title. But sometimes we forget he lost well over 3 years, three prime boxing athletic years.
That's right. You know, it's interesting. He was approached by some producers who wanted to make a version of The Great White Hope, and they wanted him to play. He said he turned that role down. He said it could have made him as much as $1.2 million during this period.
Yes.
So the sacrifice is real.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's very interesting when we think about that in the context of boxing, because, you know, Muhammad Ali was a gifted boxer, to be sure. Mm-hmm. But when he said that he might approach boxing to maybe make, just to make money, mm-hmm. he was suspended from the Nation of Islam for a year. It was his wife who had talked to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to get them back in, but part of it was because the nation thought he had strayed off the path of that rigid discipline and say, you know, but he didn't look at boxing just as a sport.
No.
Right.
That was his platform.
That was his platform.
In fact, when he was suspended, he said this during the time the trial was going on, well, it was the appeal was going on. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm out of the boxing business now. If you think I was bad before, wait till what happens next. But then he was reinstated. So Ali would have done what he had done exactly right, whether he was boxing or not.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Folks, we are awaiting for the start of the memorial service, the public memorial service there in Louisville, Kentucky, for Muhammad Ali. About a couple of hours ago, they started the burial service there in Louisville, Kentucky. Earlier today on TV One, and folks, get this ready to play. We talked to the imam who led the prayer service yesterday in Louisville, Kentucky. And he explained to us, because one of the questions was raised, that we've always heard that when a Muslim dies, they'll be buried within 2 days of dying. Well, Ali died last Friday. He was buried today. And so we asked the imam that very question, and here was his answer.
As you know, Muhammad passed away in Phoenix, Arizona. And so it was necessary for the body to be brought here to Louisville, Kentucky, his hometown and the place that he had chosen to be buried. In terms of the 2 days, that's something that's under normal circumstances, but it's not absolute. As you're well aware, Islam began its manifestation in the world in hot desert climates and hot regions of the world. So that stricture was something to encourage the body being properly buried for sanitary and safety reasons. The body would quickly start to decompose. Now with modern refrigerations and mortuaries and hospitals, even in transportation vehicles, it's possible to delay that if there are extenuating circumstances. And in this case, there were extenuating circumstances, including providing the community with an opportunity to gather and to make the plans so that, as you mentioned, they can come from literally all over the world. There's an amazing story. I could quickly relate it. A man from Bangladesh who hosted Muhammad Ali in his home in 1978, this man traveled for 4 days on a wing and a prayer. He didn't know where he would stay. He didn't have money for a hotel. He just got here after a journey of 4 days to pay his regards to the champ. And by a miraculous set of circumstances, I happened to meet this man and had the opportunity to help him find someone to stay with. But this just shows the outpouring of love. And so had we hastened with the burial, this man would not have had the opportunity to bid farewell to someone he loves deeply and someone who loved him. Muhammad extended his stays for 2 days to stay longer with mm-hmm. this man and his family. So there were extenuating circumstances on the one hand, and there are modern means on the other hand that allowed us to delay the funeral.
Well, I'll tell you, Imam and Ruler, it is extremely important, I believe, for the world to pay their respects to a humanitarian and somebody who was unapologetically black, unapologetically Muslim. Real quick, Paris.
We cannot let the political aspect of this
I'm gonna bail out this interview here, folks. Again, we are still awaiting the beginning of the start of the funeral service, the public memorial service for Muhammad Ali. We're gonna show you some, this right here is a live picture from inside of the KFC Yum Center, where close to 20,000 people will be gathering for this public memorial service. All throughout the day, folks have been paying tribute. There was a 19-mile caravan going all the way through Louisville, passing his home. I want to play some of that video, folks. You should, massive crowds as they were going down the highway, traffic on the other side of the freeway at a standstill. Some 500 police officers in Louisville are working today, working the whole route, the whole funeral route. They went by the Ali Center. This is the video here of the hearse carrying the body of Muhammad Ali, leaving the funeral home. And as you see, lots of folks there. It was a 19-mile procession. Several networks were carrying this live. ESPN was one of the folks carrying this live, with so many others. And as you see, literally traffic stopped. You see folks there taking pictures. When you see this hearse, when it started, there was nothing on it. But as they went on, this 19-mile procession, all of a sudden, you began to see people approaching the hearse and throwing flowers. And this was on the highway there, but it wasn't until they got into the neighborhood right. where Ali was born, where he grew up, where it became a lot more personal. Where it was a much smaller street. There were so many folks there. And again, folks riding on bikes. And the cops were trying to keep people away from the hearse. But actually, it sort of reminded me, this is the scene right here, folks, from earlier today, outside of his home. And it really reminded me, his home is also a museum there in Louisville. So there's an Ali Center, a five-story center dedicated to Muhammad Ali. But his home is also a museum as well. And when I thought about those flowers being thrown, I thought about Princess Diana's when her hearse was coming through. And when literally they had to walk up and wipe the flowers off of the car so they could see the exact same thing happen in this case as well. Folks, there's another video I want to play you. And this video was used on ESPN Classic, and it was a video of Ali. He was asked a question by a young man about his life and about what will he do when he retires? And again, to give you an understanding of the insight of Muhammad Ali, I think it's great to hear the question and to hear his answer.
What are you going to do when you retire from boxing?
I think he's probably taking the last count at the moment. I'll do my best to wake him up.
Just sleep.
For you.
That's all I'm going to do.
That's all he wants to do when he retires.
Well, when I retire from boxing, I really don't know. I want to say something right here. This might make you all think. Life is not really long. Let's say the average person 30 years old. If you're 30 years old, you are not but about 7 years old. How can I prove it? Add up all the 7, 8, 9 hours you slept for 30 years. Out of 30 years, out of all the nights, last night when you went to bed and woke up this morning, you don't remember a thing. You've been unconscious for about 8 years. If you're 30 years old, you slept about 8 years. Okay. How much traveling have you done in 30 years? From the television station to home, to another country, to another city, to school, to church. You've probably traveled 2 years your life was spent just getting back and forth to where you're going. So there's 8 years of sleeping, 2 years of traveling, there's 30 years out of your life before you accomplish anything. How long do you sit in school? In America, we stay in school from the 12th grade to from the first grade to 12th grade. Same here?
Yeah, virtually.
6 hours a day?
Yeah.
6 hours a day for 12 years, break it down, you sit in a classroom for 3 years without leaving. Okay, 2 years of traveling, 8 years of sleeping, 3 years of school. How many movies have you went to? How many wrestling matches? How much entertainment? How many movie theaters, live plays, baseball games? Probably 2 years of entertainment. So by the time a man, you older people know him, bear witness what I'm saying, by the time you have children, by the time you have made a way for your children, by the time you've paid for your home, you're pushing 60 years old. So life is real short. So you add up all your traveling, add up all your sleeping, add up all your school, add up all your entertainment, you've probably been half your life doing nothing. So what am I, I'm 35 years old, 30 more years, I'll be 65. We don't have no more influence. We can't do nothing much at 65. Your wife will tell you that. So what I'm saying, when you're 65, ain't too much more to do. So did you know I'll be 65 in 30 more years? In those 30 years, I have to sleep 9 years. I don't have 30 years of daylight. I have to travel back to America, take 6-7 miles. All my traveling, probably 4 years of traveling in the next 30 years, about 9 years of sleeping, television, movies, entertainment, about 3 years of entertainment. Out of 30 years, I might have about 16 years to be productive. So it's how we can all break individual lives down. What am I going to do in the next 16 years? What's the best thing I can do? Get ready to meet God. Owning real estate, going in business, teaching boxers, that won't get me to heaven. How many here believe there's a supreme being, believe there's a God? How many believe there's some power that made the sun, the moon, the stars? How many believe that this stuff didn't just come out here? Somebody wiser than us made it. How many believe there's a God? How many believe there's not a God? All right. Believe there's not a God. All right. If I told you, you who don't believe in God, if I told you that this glass sprang into existence, this glass made itself, no man made this glass, would you believe it? Would you believe I just told you this thing made itself?
No.
Well, I tell you, you wouldn't believe it, right?
No, somebody's doubting it. Yeah, so I'm giving you the answer.
Wouldn't believe it. If I told her this television station popped into existence, it just, no man made it, you say Muhammad Ali's crazy. All right. Well, if this glass can't make itself, if I told you those clothes you have on wove themselves, nobody created them, those clothes made themselves, you wouldn't believe it. But if your clothes didn't make itself, if that glass couldn't make itself, if this building didn't make itself, then how did the moon get out there? How did the stars and Jupiter, Neptune and Mars and the sun, how did nature, how did all this come here if didn't know why something planning to make it? So what I'm saying is, I believe that we're going to be judged. Should a man like Hitler kill all the Jews and get away with it? Somebody should punish him. Maybe he get it, don't get it now, he get it when he die. In hell for eternity. So what I'm going to do when I get out of boxing is to get myself ready to meet God, because my plane might blow up. Don't planes blow up in this country sometime and crash? Don't people die every day?
Not every day.
It's a scary thing to think that I'm going to hell to burn eternally forever. So what am I going to do? I'm explaining what you asked me a question. You asked me questions I can't just answer like that. When I get out of boxing or when I'm through, I'm going to do all I can to help people. That's why I'm here with Johnny Walker. Here's a poor man, came all the way to America. Here's a bunch of boys, need some money, and somebody is calling me to help them. God is watching me. God don't praise me because I beat Joe Frazier. God don't give nothing about Joe Frazier. God don't care nothing about England or America as far as your wealth is all his. He wants to know, how do we treat each other? How do we help each other? So I'm going to dedicate my life to using my name and popularity, helping charities, helping people, uniting people, bringing people, bumming each other because of religious beliefs. We need somebody in the world to help make peace. So when I die, if there's a heaven, I want to see it. Because we live how long? 80 years? The odds are everybody in this room, some of you going to be dead 20 years from now. Some of you going to be dead 50 years from now. Some are going to be dead 30, and some are going to be dead 60, 70 years from now. We all going to die soon. And if you live to be, say, 125 years old, which we don't do, right? Let's say we live to be 250, and you can have sex for 145 of those years. You're going to come to the end after that. So we don't have but about 80 years on earth. this is a test to see where will we spend our life in heaven or hell. This is not the life now. Your real self is inside you. Your body gets old. Some of you go to look at the fridge, you don't have no teeth. Your hair is leaving you. Your bodies get tired. But your soul and your spirit never die. That's going to live forever. So your body is just housing your soul and spirit. So God is testing us on how we treat each other, how we live, to see where our real home be in heaven. So this physical stuff don't last for so long. So my car, this building is going to be here when the man who built it dead. There have been many kings and queens of England. They're all dead. After this one is gone, another one will come. So we don't stay here. We're just trustees. We don't own nothing. Even your children are not yours, if you think I'm lying. Your wife is not yours. You die and come back a year later and go slip in your bedroom and see if your wife is by herself. See, you don't own your wife. You don't own your, I divorced my wife, you may have read about it, and my four children, they call another man daddy now. They don't see me no more. You don't own your children. You don't own your family. So what am I saying? The most important thing about life is what's going to happen when you die. Are you going to go to heaven or hell? And that's eternity. How long is eternity? Let's imagine. Take the Sahara Desert. There's a lot of sand on the Sahara Desert, right? And then imagine that one grain of sand represents 1,000 years. And when you're in hell burning, when you die and go to hell, you're going to burn forever and ever, no end. How long is that? Give you an idea how long eternity is. Take the Sahara Desert, and I told you to wait 1,000 years. And every 1,000 years, I want you to pick up a grain of sand until the desert is empty. Okay, wait 1,000 years, pick up the first grain. Wait another 1,000 years before you get the next grain. Keep that up until there's no more sand in the desert. Whew, you know how long just the, I mean, America's not but 200 years old. We got 800 more years to go before 1,000. So it just scares me to think that I'm going to die one day and go to hell. I'm on an airplane that might blow up. I'm always traveling. And to go to hell and God is going to judge my soul. The police, I might kill people. I might rob people. The authorities might not catch me. The FBI, Scotland Yard might not catch me. But when I die, somebody's watching me and keeping count. And I can't get away. And I'm going to burn forever and ever and ever. I'll go to heaven. So what am I going to do when I'm through fighting? I only have 16 years to be productive. Get myself ready to meet God and go to the best place. Don't that make sense?
Thank you.
That was an amazing, amazing. Greg Carr, as that was playing, you said Ali was giving his own eulogy.
Brother, this is why. You said it during the break. This is why this network is so important. This is the only place you're going to see that, brother. And whatever else is said today, Muhammad Ali has just framed what his life meant and what he hoped it continues to mean as his body has gone into the ground.
Right, and I want my children to see that. Yeah. And that's what I was saying while listening to that. It's perspective. You know, he had a great way about getting everyone to understand about how important every single minute, every single decision within that minute is for each individual.
Mm-hmm. Coach?
Don't count your days, make your days count. Mm-hmm. Live every day as if it were your last, because one day you might be right.
Kevin, are you there, Kevin? Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Did you just hear that, in essence, that eulogy by Ali? Were you able to hear that?
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing.
That was absolutely powerful.
Yeah, it was very powerful. It was very powerful. It explains what kind of person he is, and you know his views on life, man. That's why today it's so many powerful people around him to come see him get buried. So many people in attendance. Bill Clinton. You got all the famous celebrities out there. You got the basketball players. Everyone. He made a huge impact on people. Me growing up. Before I got into boxing myself, I used to always listen and hear Ali on TV, on my father's TV in his room. He used to watch him on TV. And I just hear this man just talking trash. And, you know, I'm a little younger, so I don't really understand. But he was talking trash. And then one day I just went in there.
Kevin, hold tight 1 second. I need to quickly go to Betty Baye, retired columnist for the Louisville Courier-Journal. She's actually at the service. Betty, are you there?
Yes, I'm Dad, here, Roland. How are you, dear?
I know you're about to go in. Set the scene for us. Give us a sense of what's happening in that room.
I am already inside the stadium. Thousands of people, 15,000 people are here for Ali. Thousands greeted him along the procession, along the way to his home, down into the West End, the Black End of Louisville. It has been a day of great celebration here for Ali. People are in the streets. It's warm and it's hot outside and it's cool in here. And we're getting ready to, I guess the family's getting ready to come in. But we could see the celebrities. Will Smith is here, Jesse Jackson, Mike Tyson, some of everybody is here. I haven't seen President Clinton yet, but I expect that they'll be coming in at any moment. Everybody in the spirit of Ali, there's no pushing and shoving. Everybody is very calm. Everything is so beautiful and wonderful. And Louisville, they have been saying all day too long, has never experienced anything comparable to this. This is the biggest funeral ever in the history of this city.
We saw the procession earlier, and it was just amazing to see the outpouring of people lining the streets of Louisville honoring their hometown hero.
Yes. And as I told you the other day, it's like everybody here has an Ali story. Everybody has pictures with him and everything. He really was the people's champion. And the outpouring of love today and to meet people, we went out to I'm sitting here with Audrey Edwards, formerly of Essence Magazine, you know, our colleagues through NABJ. She flew down especially for this. And so we've been together today just luxuriating in the way people have come together and just getting ready for this. This is huge, Roland. It is huge.
You told us a story the other day when we talked to you when he came by the Louisville Courier-Journal, how he would have the place riveted, and how when you went upstairs to get him some food, he said he was going to marry you.
He said, I'm going to marry you. And I said, oh, is it my turn? And of course, he was joking. But, you know, he was a ladies' man. He was extremely handsome. And so, you know, all of us, he had that sort of Bill Clinton-esque way about him that everybody felt like he was talking directly to you. You know, in that moment when he laid eyes on you, you felt extremely special, like you had his attention.
This is, it's always great to see a place honor their own. Jesus said, talked about that during the prophet having no honor in his hometown. But it's still amazing to think about. We played the video earlier of Muhammad Ali talking about when he had the gold medal, going to a restaurant in Louisville, and they said, we don't serve Negroes. And to see us fast forward, him dying at the age of 74 in Louisville, getting past that and honoring someone that they initially rejected.
Yes. And to bring all these people together at a time when Louisville, I think you noticed our level of statistics here for murders is soaring, young African-Americans killing one another. So this is a moment in time that we hope that we can extend to bring the peace that Ali, you know, wanted us to have. And so we feel like the city is being blessed today, and particularly the Black End of Louisville, where people cleaned up their yards, put their flowers out, did everything to welcome Ali in a part of town that people think is the worst part of town. So maybe, you know, his passing, we hope it's not just a moment. We hope it'll be a part of his legacy to maybe make people think about, before they kill one another, to think about Ali, you know, who had the power, if he wanted to kill a man with a punch and took his fist and used it for peace. You know, it's amazing.
Betty Baye, retired columnist, Louisville Courier-Journal, Hall of Famer, National Association of Black Journalists. We appreciate you joining us there inside of KFC Young Center, giving us a sense of the Muhammad Ali Public Memorial. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you, Roland. Bye-bye, sweetie.
Thank you. Folks, let's do a reset right now. It is 3:02 p.m. Eastern Time. The public memorial service of Muhammad Ali is going to start in just a moment. For the most part, let's go back to that shot, please. Go back to the shot of the center. For the most part, folks, they are seating everyone. You hear the music playing. Folks have been milling around, but earlier we saw all of the folks who are speaking come out on stage. This is a jam-packed center. More than 15,000 people are in there. Tickets, they quickly went away in an hour. There were some people literally who were actually scalping tickets in order to attend this. You heard Betty Baye say this is the biggest thing that has ever happened in Louisville. You're talking about a city that has actually had even a national championship. Folks, let's now go live to the KFC Yum Center for the homegoing service of Muhammad Ali.
To greet the Ali family.
Folks, what you're seeing right now is the family of Muhammad Ali as they're entering the KFC Yum Center. You see Layla Ali right there, her child as well as her husband. In a moment, we'll see several of all of his children are there. In a moment, we'll actually see his widow, Lonnie, as well, the woman for the last 31 years, who was a person who was always at his side, who was always with him. You saw there for a moment Will Smith. He is one of the pallbearers for Muhammad Ali. Lennox Lewis, the former heavyweight boxing champion, is also a pallbearer. Mike Tyson, the former heavyweight boxing champion, is also a pallbearer there. It is a star-studded affair. There are folks who you might say regular folk, ordinary folk, but also lots of celebs. Many of the top folks in the sports world are there as well. Journalist Bill Roten of the New York Times is there. Bob Costas, Brian Gumbel, of course, is going to be one of the folks providing the eulogy for Muhammad Ali as well. As I said earlier, Jim Brown, Hall of Famer, and he was one of the folks, along with Bill Russell, along with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Coach Butch McAdams, who actually went and met with Ali to get a sense of his seriousness when it came to the Vietnam draft. And after that meeting, they said, this brother here, he's serious about this. He's not joking.
Yeah. John Wooten also, former Cleveland Browns offensive lineman.
John Wooten actually organized it at the behest of Jim Brown.
And then Bobby Mitchell, the first African-American for the Washington football team.
And so, folks, again, so this is a live shot here. This is a live shot of the service right now at KFC Yum Center. They've asked everyone there to stand up as the family of Muhammad Ali enters the facility a couple of hours ago, about 2.5 hours ago. That was a burial service at a cemetery there, the same cemetery where many dignitaries in Louisville are buried. They had the private burial service after the 19-mile procession through Louisville for Muhammad Ali. They delayed this. This was supposed to start at 2 p.m., and so it's really starting shortly after 3 p.m. As you see, this facility here is normally where Louisville Cardinals play basketball there. Normally, it's a cheering throng of people there watching basketball, but on this particular day, they are there to celebrate the life and legacy of Muhammad Ali. There are two flags you see there flying. You see, of course, the U.S. flag. Then you also see the Olympic rings. And what's interesting is that the IOC actually owns the copyrights to that, and they have to give permission anytime the Olympic rings are being displayed. And clearly here you have someone who was a gold medal winner, someone who represented the Olympic ideal. It was Muhammad Ali in 1996 who lit the torch in Atlanta. We had Ambassador Andrew Young on the show earlier this week describing exactly what took place. And Greg Carr, he talked about at that particular point. Actually, do our Corps Masters Barry there? Is Corps still with us? Greg Carr. What was interesting about this is that he said that they would try to keep it a surprise, but Ali wanted a haircut. They were going to bring the barber to his hotel. He said, no, I want to go to them. He said he literally went to the barber, was talking with them, was sharing with them. He was always about the people.
Brother, you know, when he told you that, that was so Ali. In fact, I went to Tennessee State, Wilma Rudolph's alma mater. He would come.
Another Olympic gold medal winner.
In fact, they were together. So I was going to point. They were together in Rome in 1960. Mm-hmm. Wilma said, and she told everybody, Ali was the most popular athlete by far in the Olympic Village because he stopped and talked to literally everybody. Yeah. That was just who Ali was.
Yes.
He got to know everybody. Here's a kid, a teenager, man. Here he is in Rome getting to know everybody. In 96, for him to light that torch in some ways elevates what happened in that decade of the 60s.
Yes.
Harry Edwards is there. Edwards, who was part of that protest in 68 in Mexico City, that whole decade opened up international sports, and Black America led the way. Mm-hmm. So for Ali to light that torch, man, that brings all those things together. But he was always a man of the people.
Christy, he represented through his career, his life, the Olympic ideal.
Absolutely. And when he did carry that torch in 1996, it was somewhat sad to me because of the physical condition that he was in because of the Parkinson's disease and how much he was shaking. And, you know, it was dangerous. I mean, he had the torch, and how heavy was that and how difficult was that? But he persevered just like he has always done. And just to be able to watch him model what the ideal of an Olympian is, and the perseverance, the discipline, the confidence, the bold attitude, and the self-assuredness. That's what he personified his entire life.
We are going to be out in about 3 minutes. Real quick, Butch McAdams, your thoughts.
Muhammad Ali, a man of the people. Crown heads, wine heads, he loved them all.
Christy, who impressed you today?
Well, I think you have to go with his wife, Lonnie. I mean, the strength that she really showed on that stage was just something very special, and you can tell how much she really loved him.
Greg Carr?
I think Reverend Cosby really set the framework for everything that came after. And as we were talking during the break, you know, for Elijah Muhammad's name to be mentioned in passing by Brian Gumbel really speaks to the evasion of the Nation of Islam. And of course, funerals are for the living, brother. So I think they tried to do what they could do, but the nation, I can imagine there's some issues.
Well, in fact, I've received some tweets from Nation of Islam members who have been very saddened by the exclusion of the NOI. Minister Farrakhan was actually there at the particular FM memorial service, along with his sons as well. And so a lot of folks are commenting on social media as well. Folks, of course, you can follow us with our hashtag as well when it comes to this. I think when you look at what Shabazz had to say,
yes.
I think when you look at certainly what his children had to say, but there's no doubt, I believe that Pastor Cosby, by being the first speaker, established really what folks were thinking. Rabbi Lerner certainly took a lot of folks off.
No
apparently
doubt.
A couple of the networks were not happy. Folks, I got some people saying, well, you know, these political statements were not the right time. But the reality is, you cannot have a memorial service for Muhammad Ali and divorce politics.
That's right.
Because this is somebody who, I mean, that's how we got to know him. That's what made him. And so the reality is, he picked all the speakers.
Right.
He knew exactly, but he knew exactly what he was going to get
with
the folks who he picked.
That's right.
And so I think folks need to understand that. And so again, we certainly thank all of you. First of all, I want to thank all of you for joining us. Also, I want to thank everybody else, the other guests who joined us as well. It has certainly been a remarkable day. It's been a remarkable week as we have paid tribute to Muhammad Ali. Please share us your thoughts on social media as well. We certainly appreciate all of you for watching. I want to thank all of you for tweeting as well. Muhammad Ali is someone, 74 years old. He's someone who many of us were moved by, touched by. And the reality is, as we've been saying all week, Muhammad Ali was unapologetically Black. He was unapologetically Muslim. We know him because of his fierce determination to make it clear to America, you will accept me the way I want you to accept me, not the way you want me to change for you. We thank all of you and everyone here at TV One's News One Now. Have a great day. Rest in peace, Muhammad Ali.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.